This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We got an Arlington Renegades ticket giveaway to hook you up with. We are commercial free here on DFW Sports Station. And this HOV portion of the expressway driven by Mercedes-Benz of Plano. Entire morning crew back together again. Thank you for starting off your week with us. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider, Bobby Belt. Dak Prescott speaking at an awards event and creating some Cowboy headlines that both of you called out yesterday, in Dak saying, yes, if I had to play a game today, I definitely could, Dr. Choppy.
I mean, how does that make you feel? Like, let's be fair. Like, you know, like if he said he had to play today, he could, which, does any of us believe that if he had to play today, he could?
No.
I don't believe that either. Like, they have to know where he is on the injury front, do they not, at this point?
Yeah, they have their medical team working with him.
Yeah, like, they would have to know. So they know whether he's telling the truth here or if he's behind or not. And, I mean, I think Atlanta saw the same thing last year with Kirk Cousins lead up to the draft, that Kirk was behind.
Oh, he's going to be ready for the season.
He'll be ready for training camp.
He'll be ready for training camp. He'll play day one at training camp. Yeah, he'll be fine.
Okay.
But it's just, it's...
He said he's going to try to participate in most, if not all, of these first Schottenheimer workouts.
He'll be medically cleared, like, but the idea of, like, could you play today? No, you couldn't. Like, I mean, it's because even when he addressed it, he had talked about, like, I could play today if I had to. Like, 17 games, though, is what really tried. Yeah, because what you're saying is if you could play one game and probably leave it hurt because you're not ready to play. It's just a silly fib. It's like when Aaron Rodgers does his, I'll be playing by the end of December, even though I tore my Achilles 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you. Why even make that up? Why even go with that? I guess it's because nobody can actually show it, and you don't want to concern anybody by saying, well, I couldn't play today, so you're just trying to soften it. But no, he couldn't play today.
Are you factoring any of this into your draft plan?
Look, I mean, again, like they would know the exact where he is. Like, it's clear. I think it's clear Atlanta knew that Kirk wasn't going to be good to go.
Probably
at the Penix.
Yeah, because there was zero chance Penix wasn't going to be there by the time they picked. They knew all along Penix would be there. It wasn't like we had no idea he was going to drop to us. So it was clearly an indictment of what they saw from Kirk.
So I don't know that, like, I don't think Shador is going to get to 12. I think New Orleans, obviously, with Carr's shoulder injury status, that's probably his floor. I don't even think he gets there. I think the Jets would take him at 7.
I mean, Dart might be picked ahead of Shador, though, depending on the team. And so, I mean, see, New Orleans could look at it and go, we'll take Jackson Dart, and then Shador's floor becomes maybe Aaron Rodgers-like of just slip into the 20s.
So if he's here at 12, I do think you have a decision to make based on your intel of Dax Hammy. If, like, you know, and it's also like this guy's gotten injured every year for the last couple of years now. Do you have to plan? Short of that.
They did with Joe Milton.
You could be good with Joe Milton, or do you... In the second round, when that rolls around, if Jackson Dart is there in the second, which I don't think he will be, but if he is, do you take a flyer there or on Milroe or whoever?
No, I mean, I think their flyer was Milton. That's their flyer. That's the guy that they like all of his tools and they like what he could potentially do. I think they also know he's behind in certain areas, whether it be with the processing or other things like that. So they'll invest in him, see if they can put him together. I don't think there's a shot they would take Shador if he fell to 12.
Do you see the same issues that you were talking about with him and the Heupel offense, or because he was at Michigan, it doesn't matter?
No, I think in general, there have been questions about, during the pre-draft process, things you saw at Michigan, other things about his ability to process. And so that's something that can come along. The more that you throw at them, the more that they're able to learn. But there are just genuine questions, I think, about what's his mental processing like, and specifically, how is he able to put those tools together into being a complete quarterback who can actually throw the ball accurately consistently?
The rumors of 50-pound weight loss for the Slim Reaper. Or Dak, what are the other nicknames that they're calling you?
Slim Reaper. Whatever you want to call me, but real slim. No, I'm just kidding. I actually haven't really lost any weight. I'm about the same. Weights just move, building my legs back up, obviously, from the hamstring. Might be leaner up top, but weight's the same.
So you said the weight's the same.
All right. Well, I already knew that thanks to an article I read last at the end of last week that said the 50-pound weight loss wasn't true. So I already knew that, but
50 pounds.
Yeah, that was clearly.
Yeah, move on.
That's clearly just Jake Ferguson joking around like, oh, Dak down 50 pounds. I don't know
people
how
people over the weekend asked me, so did he really lose? I said, do you know how much 50 pounds is?
50 pounds.
Have you ever seen someone who's lost? It's not a normal weight transition.
It's a fifth grader.
What are you talking about?
Maybe he's lost a lot of weight off his shoulders now, knowing he doesn't have to carry everything with McCarthy gone. Maybe that's what he meant. Like he's looking 50 pounds lighter in that sense. He's got a coach that's in lockstep with him.
But. All right, the thing I was most interested in, playing today, whatever, I don't care. He's going to be fine. I trust that he's going to be fine to start off when he needs to start off. The thing that I was most interested in is him talking about his mobility. And he was asked, do you have to stop running so much? And he said, me playing my best, I'm mobile. Whether it's actually running past the line of scrimmage or scrambling, making plays happen with my arm. So that's vital for me. That is a big part of this. So Dak is telling us, no, I'm not running less. It's a part of my game, and it needs to stay a part of my game.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much less he can run than what he has. I mean, that's you're basically Tom Brady back there if you're not going to run anymore. He needs to run. That's the thing. It is part of his game.
He needs to run to throw. I would like to get some numbers on this.
Rolling out?
Feels like when he rolls out and cuts it loose, I'm betting on a big play to happen more often than not.
That's what he's at his best.
Watching him scram. I have no problem with what he said. There was a time a couple years ago, I agreed with Jerry, cut down on the design runs. It is what it is. It's part of his game. You need your little fake red zone read options for him to use his legs. It's just painful to watch him run.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, to me, it's he doesn't need to run. He needs to be mobile, though.
Yes.
Like to me, there. Whenever anybody's like, oh, he needs to run, he needs to do RPOs or he needs to have the option in there to be able to run and take it if they let the edge go. But to me, I think it's more just about being able to be mobile enough to deliver a pass or extend a play or shift. As long as he's mobile enough just to do that, they're fine. I do think that when he says, yeah, I'm not taking running out of my game, that's part of my game. That's also partly rhetoric of you're not going to tell teams, telegraph that I'm not running the ball anymore. But I think the reality is you can look at his numbers. He does not run the ball nearly as frequently. He doesn't move as much. He's going to be 32 coming up here in July. And so he's an older player who started breaking down, and you've got to limit those hits.
Jordan Lewis, Tank Lawrence gone. Dak on a possible leadership void in the locker room.
It's a great opportunity for guys. I almost don't want to say one because I want to challenge him. I mean, there's a lot of slates and a lot of positions. Obviously, Michael Parson, you know what I mean? You got CeeDee Lamb. You got guys that you can name, but there's a lot of the guys that have an opportunity to step up. But super, super excited about what we have, the veterans that we have. I mean, honestly, the one that jumped off when you ask it is Osa, right? Guys follow him. He does things the right way, but it's about creating more that you just can't deny their leadership and you can't deny their will to win.
Didn't want to name a lot of names, but Osa jumped to mind. Friend of the show, Bobby Bell.
I think Osa is naturally somebody who's going to step up, is going to be a bigger part of this, and is going to be somebody who they lean on more. Osa's considered that's the success story that you look for in terms of the guy who works really hard and reaches every bit of his potential. I think Deron Bland hopefully could be part of that, be part of stepping up. You would think as long as he's healthy, DeMarvian Overshown is kind of a big part of the leadership on that side of the ball as well. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a void here. And then more than DeMarcus Lawrence, it's Jordan Lewis. Jordan Lewis leaving here left a big hole for them in terms of somebody who holds everybody accountable and says, hey, this is our standard and everybody needs to be hitting it.
Chop mentioned it. The Saints, I'm leaving Dak with that. Anything else?
No.
You want to add?
Good.
Achapi mentioned it. Derek Carr is now apparently dealing with a shoulder injury that threatens his availability for the season. So yeah. Kellen Moore with bad quarterback news to start off, unless it's really a blessing and it's forcing you to rip off the Derek Carr Band-Aid, money and all.
Money and all. You know, Carr's got a, his floor's too high to help you get the number one pick. But he's not good enough to get you to the Super Bowl or the playoffs. I mean, maybe the playoffs.
Maybe.
With, you know, he's been there a couple times, but certainly not good enough to get you to the Super Bowl. And that's the worst spot to be in. You cannot have a quarterback that is just a little bit too good to not be bad enough. The Saints need a reset. And maybe they're lucky enough and somebody drops to them, or they take Dart, like you said, Bobby, or Shador, or whatever, or you trade up. Or you go with the Spencer Rattler route. Oh. You know, you could do that if you wanted to. Maybe Kellen Moore likes him, right? Maybe he can figure something out. But they're in a tough spot. But this may be a blessing. This may be a blessing in disguise that you lose Derek Carr potentially for the year.
Yep.
And this allows you to
go get the number one or two pick.
Yep.
I remember thinking how bad they were after they beat Dallas and just being like, that New Orleans team was really rough after the Dallas game. And so I was curious.
Dude, remember what they did to us?
Oh yeah, it was awful.
Clint Kubiak, I thought was going to be a head coach based off that game.
Based off that one game.
Yeah, it was the first 2 weeks they had put up like 50 points in both games, one against the Panthers and then against Dallas, and then they fell off after that. But it made me think, I was like, okay, what was Derek Carr's record last year? He had to be below 500. He was 5-5 when he started last year for New Orleans. Even as bad as everything went after that, they finished 500 with him. His QBR was the second highest of his career. He was 63-4.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Derek Carr. Like, he'll win you some games, and then he'll lose games that he shouldn't lose. And you look up at the schedule,
7-9 win team,
and you're 7-9, you're 8-9, you're 9-8, you're whatever, and you're right back where you started with the 10th pick.
One more Cowboy note: I've had this bad Eberflus taste in my mouth.
It's his hair gel.
He, I don't know if it's his hair gel. It could be his hair gel. He looks grumpy. I don't know. Yeah. But really what it's about is the way he conducted himself as Bears head coach. And Caleb Williams kind of verified that. He did this interview with Esquire, and he said the way Eberflus, I totally forgot the way the Bears started the season. Do you know what their record was?
They were a winning team through the first like 5-6 weeks of the season, weren't they?
They were 4-2, and the Commanders' Hail Mary would have made them 5-2. I was shocked.
Yeah,
that I was like, what? The Bears should have been 5-2. Well, the Hail Mary loss, the way Eberflus handled that, according to Caleb Williams, annoyed the Bears locker room. Not only the strategic gaffe, but also a lack of discipline. And that's not even to talk about the way he stood up and was like, I don't regret anything. What are you talking about? I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything bad. So Caleb Williams talked about some of the annoyance inside that locker room on Eberflus.
Yeah, I guess it would concern me if I was hiring him again to be a head coach. I always love these kind of hires that they made with the defensive coordinator. Because to me, when you're saying we're going to be a rehab program for what you screwed up at your last stop, on your track to getting straight again, like they did with Zimmer or like they did with Dan Quinn, or I mean, they've honestly done it with a number of different coaches, Marinelli, Richard, across the board. They go, all right, here's your rehab opportunity.
But Bob, I worry about his overall judgment. Like the Hail Mary thing, and again, these are just two instances and it could be an unfair microcosm, but the Lions game with that clock management stuff makes me worry about, now he's not going to be handling the clock as a defensive guy,
sure,
but it just makes me wonder, like, okay, if you were that far off with a judgment decision over that important of a moment, what else are you off on? Although his judgment was good enough to have them, should have been 5-2 to start off.
Yeah. And I mean, Quinn had a ton of judgment questions leaving Atlanta. Like when he got hired here, the questions were just, I mean, the game here in Dallas, a lot of people thought ultimately is what was the first domino that said you're getting fired, where they were up 20 in the second half and they blew that lead. And then the watermelon kick happens. And he got asked a question post game of like, I don't remember the specific issues, but he was asked something over a Zoom because it was 2020. It was COVID year. And he paused and he just couldn't answer for 10 seconds. He goes, I don't know. And a lot of people were like, he's done. He can't even answer questions anymore. I mean, Dan Quinn was considered a toxic candidate when he got hired here. and it ended up working out. So I think similarly, Eberflus is going to look back, and there's an image that he knows he has to repair, and so I think this is an easy spot to be able to do it.
Inside the Star on your official home of the Dallas Cowboys and the draft coverage. I'll be in Mesquite. So if you're a Mesquite, Tolo, come out and join me. Where are you guys going to be?
I'll be at the Pluckers in the Roman Coliseum.
Oh, that's right.
I'll be inside that one.
Yes.
Yes.
Bob, you'll be working coverage?
I'll be in the basement of the Star. We'll be doing coverage there. And then coming up this Thursday, we have Draft 101. So it's our staple draft event with you, the Tolo. Draft 101 in the fan showroom, 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. Brian Broaddus, Zach Wolchuk, myself. We'll have Whataburger, a night of debate, questions, everything else that you're going to do. That is this Thursday night for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the fan. No sign-up required.
No sign-up required.
Just show up.
You producing?
Yes, I will be here Thursday and Saturday. So
he'll be off Monday then.
Yeah, that's right.
Just worn down.